Is China about to experience a Lehman Brothers debt crisis? Former Fed official warns that a financial crisis is imminent, and Morgan Stanley cuts its GDP targets for the third quarter, but not to be outdone, I'm cutting mine too. Answer those questions more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today because it's hard to see what's going on in the global economy with U.S. investors completely fixated on the U.S. stock market, and they're ignoring the warning signs of what's going on around other parts of the world. And we're going to look to China because they're on the verge of a Lehman Brothers debt default crisis. Now, you may remember going back prior to the great financial crisis, Lehman Brothers blew up, market went down, everyone said, this is great, let's buy in, and they did only to have a Bear Stearns blow up and then the entire great financial crisis get out of control. And we're seeing the signs of that brewing in China. Now, you may wonder, how is it possible this could even be happening? Because central banks around the world are easing. They're doing massive amounts of easing. Interest rates are near zero. And that's the whole point, is as I've shared with you over the years, quantitative easing, even though by name has term easing in it, tightens financial conditions until it eases. And what do you need to get quantitative easing to ease? You need credit growth, which we're not seeing, but we'll look at that today. And so when you go back now to the pandemic and what was the response by the United States, we borrowed a lot of money. We took it out dollars away from the global system of dollars, a global pool of dollars, and brought them inside to the United States. And that created another layer of tightening on top of quantitative easing. So it was likely that we're going to see problems in foreign economies before we see them here in the U.S. Now, like as I mentioned, a lot of investors aren't looking overseas, but in China right now, we could be facing that black swan event that U.S. investors are going to completely miss and wish they saw. Let's head over to China to take a look and see what's going on, because Evergrande bonds are halted. Can you imagine, halted their trading of their bonds amid liquidation panics as contagion spreads to other Chinese junk bonds being high yield bonds. And these are type of bonds that they do not have the strong credit ratings or credit backings of other companies, like other companies do. So what do these companies have to pay? A higher yield. So investors take on more risk. But sometimes that risk isn't worth the yield. And here you can see what's going on, this article from Zero Hedge. And we're going to get into this because this is could be the big issue that's coming. And you're going to see why China may not even bail them out. With algos busy chasing upward momentum in futures and global stocks, the biggest, if largely ignored story, remains the ongoing collapse of China's Lehman, the $300 billion. Now, keep in mind, this is B with a billion, China Evergrande, where following our earlier reports that a bank run emerged among creditors of the biggest and most indebted, keyword, biggest and most indebted Chinese developer, as its bonds were no longer eligible collateral in the repo at market after a ratings downgrade. Now, let's pause for a second so you can understand what that means when it says no longer eligible in the repo market. Now, you may remember we talked about reverse repo and repo here in the U.S. And in the repo market, you can take eligible collateral, which is treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities, go to the Fed and get an overnight loan for cash. So these type of repo markets exist in other parts of the world. And previously, up until now, these Evergrande bonds were eligible as collateral. Means Evergrande could, or anyone else, could take their bonds, more specifically them, go to the repo market and get cash now. Now, think about that in terms of, say, a payday loan. You know, you need money now, but you don't get paid until next week. So you go to the payday lending place. And what do? You give them effectively rights to your next paycheck as collateral, and they give you the money now. So when you have tightening financial conditions around the world and you have a large amount of debt, you have debt that needs to be serviced. And if you don't have the cash flow to do it, just what you're seeing here with Evergrande, how do you get that cash flow? You post your bonds as collateral, get cash, pay your bills now, and then as cash flow comes in, you can then make yourself whole. So let's go on. So now you understand they've been cut off by turning their bonds in to get cash. That's what happened. This is very serious. This happened on Monday, so that'd be today. The route went from bad to catastrophic as various Evergrande bonds crashed amid liquidation frenzy. Now, think about this. Why would, if you own one of these Evergrande bonds, why would you want to now? Because they're now illiquid, prompting China Stock Exchange to halt trade. So that is pretty serious. Let's go down into this article. And we can see that Shanghai Exchange data showed that the bond sliding more than 25%. That is huge after the resumption of trade on Monday. Let's keep digging in here and see what happened. The endgame for Evergrande bond started on Friday when China Securities Depository and Clearing Company reduced the conversion ratio of the July 2022 bond to zero, effective September 7th. That would be tomorrow. Other Evergrande bonds were not included in the table of conversion ratios on Friday as they no longer qualified for inclusion. So again, that's telling you that you can't go to the repo markets on this. These are not liquid anymore. The conversion ratio determines leverage limits for repo financing given a specific bond pledge as collateral. The CSDC is owned by the Shanghai and Shenzhen stock exchanges. In other words, Evergrande suddenly finds itself with zero access to the repo market, which funded it to the tune of billions headed into Friday. And this is pretty serious for this company because it's now at a risk of potentially defaulting. So let's see that in here. If we can find that piece in this article, here it is. As noted below, Evergrande warned last week if it risks defaulting on its debt, remember $300 billion, if asset disposals fail to materialize. The company said on Friday, contracted sales, including those to suppliers and contractors, to offset payments dropped 26% when compared to a year ago. And that is the problem. When you have effectively a credit bubble, you have this massive expansion, and then any slowdown in demand can lead to a contraction. And that means there isn't enough money to service debts, and you potentially have defaults. And as we know from the great financial crisis, there's huge ramifications. So this isn't just ending with Evergrande. I want to show you where it's having knock-on effects to other bonds. And you can see here, Guangzhou RNF dollar bonds at fresh lows as worries persist. Because what's happening? What did we learn from the great financial crisis? That it wasn't just Lehman Brothers. It wasn't just them. It turned out to be Bear Stearns and some other people. And all of a sudden, these are serious worries that are causing bond prices to fall and perhaps lead to a financial crisis starting outside of the U.S., which is where I thought it would always start. Now let's go to a former Fed official who's warning right now that we are perhaps on the edge of a financial crisis because the Fed doesn't have the power to stop one. Former Fed official warns of urgent threat to another financial crisis. Now, Don Cohn, he is the former vice chair in the world of the Federal Open Market Committee. There is a board. There's a chair, who is Jerome Powell today. Then there's a vice chair, and then there's everyone else. While the everyone else does have a voice, there's only two people that matter. It's the chair and the vice chair. So when a former vice chair speaks and tells you, hey, there's problems going on here, there probably are. We should pay attention to this. Let's take a look. He calls on Congress to pass financial stability mandates for regulators. What is going on, Don? Let's take a look. Investors cheered Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell's Jackson Hole speech on Friday, with Marx interpreting it as to mean the central bank would not too quickly wind down in support of the economy. Really, it's the bond market. But every speaker at the annual gathering gave caution, and not every speaker gave caution for optimism. Don Cohn, the Fed's former vice chair for financial supervision, used the opportunity instead to warn of imminent risk to the stability of global financial system and called on regulators and lawmakers to take swift action to address those concerns. Well, what is Don worried about? He said dealing with the risk to the financial stability is urgent. He said during a speech, the current situation is replete with unusually large risks of the unexpected, which if they come to pass, perhaps Evergrande, could result in the financial system amplifying shocks, putting the economy at risk. He pointed to the meetings of the most recent Federal Reserve meeting, which indicated members of the bank's interest rate setting committee saw there were notable vulnerabilities in the financial system as asset values have risen to historical highs. No surprise. And government and private debt, have reached near record levels relative to the size of the economy. See, if too much debt, overinflated asset prices, and that is a problem. And what he says is the government appears to be in a poor position to respond to an economic downturn that could result in bursting of an asset bubble or debt crisis, given that the Federal Reserve is already engaged in aggressive monetary stimulus, while the federal government is maintaining a historically high budget deficit. So he's saying exactly what I've been warning you about, is the Federal Reserve at $120 billion a month is already near the extreme end of what it can do from monetary policy. It's got one bullet left in the gun. The next downturn, it goes to QE infinity. It buys every treasury note and bond on the market. Doesn't need to buy bills because there's a shortage of those. Drives interest rates across the board to zero, and it then becomes tapped out. If that does not work, what you'll hear is the Fed chair come out and say, we've done everything we can. We cannot do anything more. And that is the end of monetary policy and puts all the risk now on the federal government from fiscal stimulus, which we're now hearing from Congress, they're not too excited about doing. So here we are, as we've looked at the data last week, we're seeing the consumer confidence data rolling over. The sentiment data is tanking. We're looking like we're heading into another double-dip recession. And here we're hearing from a former Fed official that we're getting tapped out and the Fed will not be able to solve the next financial crisis. Huge, huge implications. And we can see the brewing of this crisis right now, because today millions of people are set to lose their benefits as pandemic jobless aid expires. This from Statista. The number of persons claiming unemployment benefits in the U.S. in the week ending August 14, 2021 by program, the pandemic unemployment assistance available to individuals who are self-employed or who otherwise would not qualify for regular unemployment, and the emergency unemployment, which extends benefits by 24 weeks for individuals who exhausted all rights to regular unemployment compensation. There's over 9.2 million people. Those benefits expire on September 6th. That's today. We go to the Washington Post, who taps the Century Foundation. 3 out of 4 on unemployment will lose benefits. 3 federal pandemic unemployment programs. And again, mind you, this is the largest expiration of government support on the labor market in history. That expires today, creating, there it is, largest benefit cliffs in history. And what do we see? Federal benefits in all states, 2.7 million will have benefits reduced, and 7.5 million will lose all benefits, all of them, state benefits, federal benefits, all of them. If that isn't a warning sign of what is to come, I don't know what's in. What is? Let's head over to our buddy Jeff Snyder from Alhambra Partners, who posted these graphs, his recent blog update. If you're not reading Jeff, you should be. When he talks, Bonking listens. And he was showing the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey against the conference boards. And you can see the University of Michigan in the dotted red leading the conference board lower. More importantly, I mentioned there had to be something to do with consumer confidence and inflation. And we'll leave it to Jeff to write about that. And sure enough, he shows here the University of Michigan index consumer sentiment has it heading down. Well, we tend to see when it heads down, he's suggesting that also we get inflation down with that. All right, let's head over to what's driving the markets today, and that is bank buybacks are hit record, propelling stocks. It's not tech stocks anymore. It's banks buying all their stocks, shares back, sending markets to record highs. And we look over to some charts here that were provided by B of A Securities. Financials are leading buybacks. This happened after the Fed gave the banks the clearance to go ahead and buy their shares back after we kind of came out of that penalty box from the pandemic, and banks were given the clearance and they said, great, we're going to unload a massive bazooka and buy. And you see total buybacks sitting in the large caps. You know, you wonder kind of why the small cap stocks aren't really moving much, and they're looking like they're topping, as we talked about in the Sunday night chart show. For weeks and weeks, we've been talking about that. It's because all the share buybacks are dominated into large cap stocks. Here we see Exhibit 3, financials, corporate client buyback trends are at record level. So client buybacks in millions and percent of sector market cap between 2010 and present. You see financial buybacks at record highs, matching where they were in late 2019, early 2020. And so we continue on with the story, and we see the sector with the most buybacks in a given week. If you're wondering why the market dips and then bounces, it's because the banks are literally putting the bazooka of buybacks into the market. So we see this relative to the S&P 500 performance. the top sector conducting buybacks. So what it's saying is, look, if you want to be in the market, you should be where the buybacks are happening, because at least there's some, you know, element of safety in that. Doesn't mean it is safe at all, but this maybe gives you some comfort knowing that someone else is buying every time they're selling. How about we head over to Morgan Stanley, who nukes its third quarter GDP forecast, now sees just 2.9% growth, down from 6.5%. That is a big drop in their estimates. 2 weeks ago, Goldman caused a stir across Wall Street and financial media when the bank slashed its GDP forecast for the second time in 3 weeks and now sees just 5.5% Q3 growth, down from 8.5% previously, even as it saw inflation continue to rise. And while Goldman didn't use the word for obvious reasons, the conclusion is stagflation. Again, this is what we've been talking about. You get high unemployment, you get rising prices, people can't afford them, and that leads to a slowdown or a contraction in the economy. Now, not to be outdone, because I feel bad for Morgan Stanley and their predictions, let's look at their charts, and I'm going to show you how I'm going to revise my forecast lower too, and how you could really do that as well. There's really no secret to what they're doing. And here we see Exhibit 3, Goldman Sachs. We've cut our third quarter GDP forecast growth, but raised our forecast for later quarters. So they're saying here just a slowdown in Q3 from Goldman with it perking up. Consensus is a little higher for quarter three in light blue, and then it trails down after that. I think that's going to be pretty optimistic with 7.5 million people going on unemployment, unless they all get jobs. But how could you predict this? It's simple. You can go to the Fed database, take the GDP, run it on a year-over-year comp, which is on the left, and then how about manufacturers' new orders of durable goods? This is a monthly data point. And you can see the GDP tends to follow where durable goods new orders are going. We'll get this month's number in the weeks to come, expected to be lower. And what does that mean for GDP growth? Well, that means it's coming down somewhere perhaps in this 5% range or a little bit lower, but somewhere around 5%. Can we use consumer sentiment data to get a prediction as well of that? We sure can. We can take the University of Michigan consumer sentiment. Now, mind you, this is not the preliminary data showing that big plunge that Jeff Snyder has on his charts, and you can run it on a year-over-year basis too. Again, both of these in the Fred database. So we know the University of Michigan data is coming down. Now, it's not as in sync. There's more volatility in the University of Michigan data than the GDP, but it is predicting the GDP data is going to go down. What's another way you could predict it? How about consumer spending, advanced retail sales? Again, you can run this on a year-over-year rate of change. Also expected to go down for the fourth month in a row, which is extremely rare. You almost never see that outside of recession on the month-over-month data, but expected to be in contraction again. And there's your prediction for a slowdown, a massive slowdown in GDP growth for the third quarter. Now let's head over to that banking data, because this is where you get that credit growth that we talk about. It's so important. You know, you need credit growth to create money. Create money, you can service old debts. And when you have a lot of debts and a slowdown, well, that's when you're playing musical chairs in the global financial system. Music stops, people can't pay, and you get defaults. So we see bank credit expanded about $20 billion, which is pretty sizable. Securities and bank credit up approximately $10 billion, with the biggest driver in non-mortgage back or U.S. Treasuries. Looking at loans and leases, we see they're up about $10 billion. The rest of this, consumer loans, up surprisingly. Consumers continue to borrow money, up $7 billion. Where's most of this lending coming from outside the consumer? Well, we get down to this other category, and we see loans to non-depository institutions. So we're seeing some other lending that's not really getting into the economy, more into financial assets. Cash assets at the bank up about $15 billion. Now let's take a look at how that flows into the charts that we like to look at every week, except when I forget to. Real estate loan growth is up to 0.3% from a year ago. So you're not seeing lending growth, not seeing money created. Now, the good news, if you want to look for some good news, and this is 6-month rate change, and is implying that the The 12-month should be upwards of 2%, and the 3-month rate change at 1.3 is suggesting that the year-over-year rate could move up to the 4 to 5% range. We'll see how long that holds, but so far we're seeing these dip in interest rates create some growth in the real estate market, but again, it's way off. It needs to be way up here in this 5-plus percent range to have any sustainability. How about we look at commercial industrial loans? The second big boy on the block, growth rate is flat. At minus 13.5%. It's still in contraction, but it's not growing anymore. The 6-month rate of change is at minus 7.25% and falling. 3-month rate of change is coming up from minus 4.5%. So again, not a strong trend as corporations are not borrowing. And that takes total loans and leases at bank credit. The growth rate is up to minus 1%. So it's in recessionary territory. You know, we do see a rise coming out of recession, but now we're facing a potential double dip. The 6-month rate of change is 0.5% rising. 3-month rate of change still under 1%. All of that due to the real estate market. And then we look at the consumer, who's really leveraged back up, which is really impressive. Their credit cards are now growing at almost 2.6% from where they were a year ago. So the big risk, though, you gotta look over to China, because what is to come perhaps could send the entire global financial system into a recession. U.S. investors won't see it coming because they have too much faith. The stock market only goes up, and the Fed is the one that somehow magically makes stock prices go up. But you know better than that. Anyways, we'll see you back on Wednesday for the show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information. It's not intended to provide investor advice. This video is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by a Social Security financial instrument or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Reports and capacity opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Alice Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.